Today, the sham build to rent property solution. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, webinar that is post covering finance and property news. Demand for a place to live remains very high, driven by population growth from mega high migration and low but perhaps improving vacancy rates in the rental sector. We know that roughly one third of households own their own property outright, one third own with a mortgage, and one third rent. Those in the last two categories are expanding, while those who own outright are shrinking as a proportion of the total, though with some state variations. The 2021 census confirmed that around 9.8 million households nationally, 68.1% own their home either with or without a mortgage, down from 71.5% in 2001. And the inverse of this is the population of households who rent, 31.9% in the 2021 census, and there is an expectation that the share of households that rent will continue to gradually trend upward over the next 15 years, hitting 34.4% by December 2039, and that would represent around 4.4 million rental households. So, like it or not, availability of property to rent is a critical issue. Now, over the decades, the government has effectively outsourced the provision of rental housing to the private sector via mum and dad investors predominantly, who get considerable tax breaks to hold property for rent, and more recently through the rise of the so-called build-to-rent sector, which is being held out as a solution to the lack of property to rent. For the root cause of all this, see my show yesterday, where we looked at the history of government-led housing and how it got removed thanks to deliberate policy changes. Households in the investment sector actually are running in two directions at the moment. Some with cash to spend are buying up some properties, while others in financial stress are selling. Indeed, the latest housing lending stats showed continued growth in the property investment sector. As the ABS reported, the total housing lending rose 1.3% to $29.3 billion dollars after a fall of 1.7% in May. It was 19.1% higher compared to a year ago. So the banks are laughing, really. Within that, owner-occupier housing rose 0.5% to $18.2 billion, and that was 13.2% higher compared to a year ago. But investor housing rose 2.7% to $11 billion and was a massive 30.2% higher compared to a year ago. Investor lending rose in New South Wales, up 4.6%. In the ACT, it rose 8.6%. In the Northern Territory, it rose 15.1%. And in Tasmania, it rose 2.2%. And in South Australia, it was up 0.1%. But in Queensland, lending fell 3.3%. And in Western Australia, it fell 1.9%. And in Victoria, it was down 0.7%. Now, we've also highlighted that, in fact, property investor households received the biggest boost from the government tax changes and handouts, with a fall in investors in financial stress. That dropped considerably, actually. But on the other hand, we also see a significant rise in listings for sale of investment properties, especially in and around Melbourne, thanks to falling net rental yields and more regulation of the sector, with Queensland, by the way, following on behind, and Sydney is also tipping as well. And also, future capital growth on property is not that assured given the higher path of interest rates ahead. Thus, it's clear that mum and dad investors will not be able to provide the amount and quality of housing which the market needs, especially with the current high migration settings. Now, this takes us on to the build-to-rent sector, which is already well established in the US and Europe, but is still only in its early days in Australia. It involves the development of a high-density apartment block built expressly for rental accommodation and owned typically by a single or small club of institutional landlords or a fund. Foreign investors have become major players, with large capital commitments driving the upsurge. Actually, though the construction of built-to-rent projects slumped by 19% over the 2024 financial year in the face of high borrowing costs and policy uncertainty over the tax regime applied to foreign-owned projects. That's according to a report from Oxford Economics. They are suggesting that build-to-rent is set to make up a notable component of the upswing in high-density construction late in the decade, holding nearly 20% of apartment starts, thus becoming a big component of hitting the federal government's target of 1.2 million new homes over the next 5 years. They actually estimate that commencements for new rental units fell to 5,290 in 2024. That's well down on the 6,543 starts achieved a year earlier. But by 2027, commencements would jump, they say, well past the 8,000 mark and dominated by Victoria, where suitably located land parcels are comparatively cheaper. One hurdle for increased foreign investment is the imposition of a 30% withholding tax on the managed investment trusts through which offshore players typically hold build-to-rent assets that they've developed in Australia. The government has promised to halve that tax, bringing it in line with the tax rate applied to other forms of foreign-owned commercial property. But draft legislation released in April and still under consideration sets out the eligibility for tax reductions to include a requirement that 10% of the dwellings in a build-to-rent project should be offered as affordable tenancies. Potential foreign investors are waiting on the sidelines as they seek further clarity. This has made it harder for many developers to access capital and finance their pipeline of work, the Oxford report noted. Any uncertainty around the introduction of the reduction in tax represents a potential downside risk to the outlook, according to Oxford. But then, as the AFR reported, build-to-rent plans risk repelling investors. A Labour scheme that aims to attract foreign investors to build more affordable rental housing stock is likely to have the opposite effect and repel them, and it should be overhauled. That's according to evidence given in front of a parliamentary inquiry this week. The Albanese government's legislation to provide new tax incentives for foreign investors in the early stage of the build-to-rent sector is stuck in the Senate. Along with legislation for Labour's Help to Buy scheme, the plan is caught up in the heated pre-election politics of housing policy and also lacks support from the Greens and the Coalition. For developers to take advantage of the proposed incentives, which would apply to projects with 50 or more apartments sold on the open market, properties must be retained under single ownership for at least 15 years, and 10% of the development must consist of affordable tenancies. Property Council of Australia boss Mike Zorbas said that at just 0.2%, the build-to-rent market was well below levels of 12% in the US and 5% in the UK. Build-to-rent is the missing piece of the Australian housing puzzle, he said, but added that in its current form, the legislation would be completely ineffective in attracting new investors. The Greens have played hardball with Labour on housing policy, helping precipitate newly appointed Housing Minister Claire O'Neill's shift into the role, replacing former Minister Julie Collins. Greens spokesman Max Chandler Mather said last week that the minor party's support was not contingent on demands to curb the capital investment tax exemption and negative gearing deductions for investors, as previously stated, but he said the plan was savaged in Wednesday's hearing. The new housing minister should take this chance to come back to the drawing board and negotiate a real plan with the Greens that includes a nationwide freeze and cap on rents increases, phase out of tax handouts for property investors, and a mass investment in public housing. Treasury officials told Wednesday's hearing that build to rent was a gap in the Australian market, with only 11 developments currently underway nationally. We want to have a diversity of housing types here in Australia, Assistant Secretary Susan Bultitude said. Getting in the foreign investors who have the experience and know-how is seen as very important in supporting that industry to develop and bring in some more domestic players who will build their experience over time. Attracting foreign capital means you're getting new capital into building housing supply. You're not just exchanging one form of capital for another or one form of housing for another. You're actually getting additional new capital in, which will help boost housing supply. Coalition Home Ownership spokesman Andrew Bragg said, foreign investors should not be advantaged over Australian buyers. Build to rent would change the character of Australian housing from individuals to institutions, he said in the statement. This is another sad chapter in Labor's destruction of the Australian dream. And his ex post read, bad idea, bad execution. Australians don't want BlackRock and Cbus to own our houses. Bernie Armstrong, Chief Executive Investment Manager Cedar Pacific, which is developing a $1.2 billion portfolio of build-to-rent apartments, said the intention of the bill had not been met. If we want to attract foreign capital, which clearly seems to be the best way forward, it should be just a fair level playing field. My feeling is that it should be handled in the planning outcomes rather than the tax outcomes. The MIT structure tends to level the playing field for both offshore and onshore structures, but the tax bill has tried to introduce a few things that don't appear in other MIT structures. By doing that this way, offshore money basically has to provide affordable housing, and onshore money doesn't have to provide affordable housing. And that 1.2 million homes target is looking increasingly further from reach as high construction costs make large development projects, particularly apartment developments, even less viable. That was amplified by Mirvac's shock profit downgrade, which is all about its struggle to make apartment projects profitable, even as the housing shortage worsens. Property developer Mirvac announced this week a solid enough result for the 2024 financial year, as operating profit came in at $552 million. That's down 5% in challenging conditions. But they shocked the market by announcing guidance for 2025 that was 10% below what the market had expected, and Mirvac shares duly plunged 10% in response. The problem is this. In the worst housing crisis in living memory, Mirvac is struggling to make a dollar from its apartment projects. That's the perfect storm for housing construction, writ small. The problem is that the projects that Mirvac started either just before or during the COVID-19 pandemic, to get an apartment development off the ground and to secure support of the banks and other lenders, you need to sell a certain number of units up front. But since then, the cost of development has changed radically. Material costs have risen, labour costs have skyrocketed, and of course, higher interest rates mean financing costs have also risen. And bad weather has also caused delays, and delays cost money. Mirvac says that subcontractors have been going insolvent too at highly elevated levels. So Mirvac then needs to find a new subby who generally wants more money, and there are more delays and more costs. And while they're doing what they can to change the game, including more modular construction to reduce costs and smaller projects to better manage risk, the truth is most of the big builders in Australia simply don't want to touch apartment developments at the moment because there is much other work that they can get that carries less risk. Government infrastructure projects are at the top of the list, actually, quickly followed by energy transition projects and the growing number of data center projects. So they say the government needs to think more about their own infrastructure spends, where they want resources to be allocated, and whether they want to make sure that developers are going to survive. Mirvac's battles are one thing, but there is a broader issue here, and that is just how Australia has got itself into a position where building apartments, logically the most affordable way to enter the housing market, is such a crummy business. And standing back, the critical question is, do we really want to go further into the mire of neoliberalism and let big international investors build homes to rent in Australia with rents that, according to Cameron Murray, are typically higher than from local providers, while offering even more tax breaks to corporates? Or should the government get back into the home building game? See my discussion with Elisa Barwick yesterday. Through a public bank? And should we also dial back migration to a sustainable level? Well, ideology apart, the answer seems obvious, and yet they still want more migrations to pump GDP and more builds to rent to meet a housing target, which was built in fairyland. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au, and if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.